Good afternoon. Thank you all for being here today. My name is Aramiq Glass, A-E-I-R-A-M-I-Q-U-E, Glass, G-L-A-S-S. I am the interim independent police monitor for the city of Madison. Earlier this week, I released my investigative report into the in-custody death of Richard Lee Johnson. Today, you are going to hear from his family, those who loved him, those who were close to him. You're going to hear from my team members who also worked on this investigation. You're going to hear from community members, PCOB members, alders, in regards to the unfortunate and preventable death of Mr. Johnson. I'm going to just name a few facts. I've put out not only the investigative report, but also the press release. So I won't read all of that to you all. But I think there are multiple things that we need to dive deep on. We need to have a really difficult conversation as to why, after seconds of an officer pulling up to the scene, when Mr. Johnson was already in a prone position, why that officer felt the need to push Mr. Johnson's head into the ground and then put his knee across his neck with enough pressure that he could not breathe. This is not a situation where we see an officer-involved shooting and we see somebody unarmed getting shot. This is not a situation where, when we've seen George Floyd for so many minutes, have somebody's knee on his back. This is a situation where this could have changed and been different if he would have gone to the hospital. For 29 minutes, I watched a video probably over 100 times of 29 minutes of Mr. Johnson fighting for his life in the back seat while an officer laughed. She laughed while she was having a casual conversation while Mr. Johnson was fighting for his life. Prior to the transport of Mr. Johnson, the same officer opened the door, asked him what was wrong multiple times, closed the door before he answered, and allowed the transport to continue. When Mr. Johnson became unresponsive after 29 minutes of fighting for his life, no one said, let's go to the hospital. Let's turn this car around. They sat in the Sally Port for a few moments. For 10 minutes, from the time he went unresponsive to the time they started compressions, it was 10 minutes. 10 minutes that could have changed us standing here today. 10 minutes that could have saved his life. That didn't happen. After the review of the medical examiner's report, after the review of the toxicology report, after the review of DCI, the Department of Justice report, after the clearance of these officers by the DA, there were questions I had. So I retained Dr. Whedon, who did an independent report, medical report. And the questions that I had and the assumptions that I did not want to believe based on what I had reviewed were true. I'm going to have Dr. Greg Golombek, our data and forensic analyst, come up and just give an overview, as Dr. Whedon could not be here today, of Dr. Whedon's report, the findings, and the cause of death.
Our office retained Dr. Victor Whedon as an independent forensic pathologist. Dr. Whedon was retained given his extensive 35-plus years of experience as a board-certified forensic pathologist, as well as specific specialized experience with in-custody deaths. Dr. Whedon is currently a deputy medical examiner for Dane County, but was retained and generated his report prior to entering his current position. In his analysis, Dr. Whedon reviewed and utilized the State Department of Criminal Investigation report, the MPD, Police Standards and Internal Affairs investigative report, the medical examiner's report, the medical records from Meritor Hospital, where Richard was taken, the EMS reports, the dash cam video and audio from the squad car of officers Weaver and Lewis. This includes audio from the mic on Officer Weaver and internal car mics and front-facing and backseat video. The dash cam video also reviewed the dash cam video and audio from the squad car of Officer Gonzalez, which includes audio from the mic on Officer Gonzalez. I will now discuss Dr. Whedon's findings. Dr. Whedon found that Richard Johnson died from restraint, cardiac arrest, metabolic acidosis. The initial Dane County Medical Examiner's report incorrectly ascribed his death to cocaine toxicity. However, with cocaine toxicity as a cause of death, one would expect ventricular arrhythmias, hypertension, and significant cocaine levels in the blood. None of that was the case here. A serum sample was collected immediately after Richard's arrival at the hospital, within minutes of becoming pulseless, and was quantitatively tested for cocaine. There was no detectable cocaine in his serum. Only inactive cocaine metabolites, inactive breakdown products remaining from much earlier cocaine use. So at the time his symptoms were occurring, progressing to pulselessness, it appears that he only had detectable levels of inactive cocaine metabolites in his blood, contradicting the hypothesis that cocaine toxicity caused his death. And again, there weren't arrhythmias, i.e. abnormalities in heart rhythm, or hypertension, elevated blood pressure, that you would expect with cocaine toxicity. Instead, there was non-shockable cardiac rhythm. In other words, Richard's heart was a normal sinus rhythm, but failing to pump. And there was severe acidosis, extremely low blood pH, and hypercapnia, elevated carbon dioxide levels in his blood. These are all typical of prone restraint cardiac arrest. And the timing of the symptom onset and death lines up with police activity. Richard's difficulty breathing started with being held in prone restraint. All the symptoms started from that point. Richard would have been in a hyperadrenergic state, a stressed, energized state, given the ongoing events. This and the foot pursuit and subsequent struggle would have greatly elevated his metabolic activity with lactic acid production and increased carbon dioxide production. So he had a greatly increased need to offload carbon dioxide, to blow off carbon dioxide, to restore normal blood pH and carbon dioxide levels. But that couldn't effectively be done when restrained in prone position, which restricts breathing, especially with the weight of officers pressing down on him much of that time. And from there, Richard spiraled down, and levels of lactic acid in his blood would have continued to climb. His moderate obesity would have been another risk factor. When in prone position on his stomach, it would have further constrained diaphragm movement. With severe acidosis, the cardiac muscle fails and stops being able to pump blood effectively while electrical conduction pathways in the heart remain functional. And thus you get pulselessness with non-shockable rhythm. In other words, a shock from a defibrillator wouldn't help, as happened with Richard. Shortly after arriving at the hospital, his venous pH was measured at less than 6.82. This severe acidosis greatly impaired his heart's ability to pump blood, as documented by weak pulses and echocardiogram findings of global cardiac hypokinesis. In other words, his heart was contracting less than it should, and a low ejection fraction of 25%. He ultimately died of multi-organ and brain death caused by anoxic injury due to the cardiopulmonary arrest. I want to emphasize the Dane County Medical Examiner's Office should not be criticized for drawing an erroneous conclusion in this case. Restrained cardiac arrest is not a well-known entity, so a typical medical examiner would often not be familiar with it, and it doesn't leave obvious markers apparent in the autopsy. In addition, medical examiners need to come up with some cause of death, so they're forced to guess, and they'll tend to seize on something. Attributing such deaths to cardiac pathology or drugs is a common error. The Dane County Medical Examiner's Office then classified Richard's manner of death as accident because of the error in ascribing the cause of death to cocaine toxicity. As Dr. Whedon's presentations, publications, and interviews made clear, deaths due to cardiac restraint arrest, metabolic acidosis, since they are caused by volitional actions of police, restraining someone in prone position, constitute homicides and should be certified as homicides. Just to be clear, I will add that homicide is the manner of death, is not a judgment about intent. I'll also mention some of the symptoms Richard exhibited and how they relate to the cause of death. After he was restrained in prone position, Richard was unable to stand unsupported and his legs were flutter kicking when seated on the ground. And after being placed in the squad car, you can observe ongoing kicking and whole body jerking, thrashing while he was being transported to the jail. This was all involuntary. It was myoclonus, severe widespread muscle spasming, which is a common symptom of severe hypercapnia and acidosis. All of this muscular activity would have generated further lactic acid and carbon dioxide, making the situation worse. And the exaggerated breathing and Richard saying he couldn't breathe were manifestations of hypercapnia and respiratory distress. The groaning that Richard exhibited can be observed as involuntary adaptive response to generate positive end expiratory pressure to keep alveoli and small airways from collapsing at the end of exhalation in a person in respiratory distress. With how he was breathing, he was trying to restore his blood pH and carbon dioxide concentrations to normal levels, but couldn't. He just couldn't catch up. And with the severe acidosis and hypercapnia and decline in cardiac function, there was ongoing deterioration in cognitive function with a reduction in the level of consciousness and delirium until Richard finally slumped over unconscious.
Thank you, Greg. Now we are going to have Ms. Johnson.
My name is Gloria Johnson Vincent. I am the mother of 7 children, and Richard Johnson Jr. was my baby boy. On December 30th, 2025, my world changed forever. My son was taken away at just 31 years old, and not a single day has passed without the weight of the loss crushing my heart. There is no pain greater than a mother having to bury her child. There are no words that can truly describe the emptiness, the sleepless night, the unanswered questions, and the tears that come when you realize your child is never coming home. Richard was not a headline. He was not a He was a human being. He was my son. He was a brother to 6 siblings who loved him dearly. He was family. He was a friend. He was a man with a future, a purpose, and a life that mattered. Today I stand before you, carrying not only my grief, but also my determination. I stand here because my son deserves answers. My family deserves answers. Our community deserves answers. We have serious concern about the action and failure of those who was sworn to protect and serve. We believe There was negligence surrounding the circumstances that led to Richard's death. And we refuse to allow these concerns to be ignored or swept aside. When government agencies and law enforcement officers are entrusted with the power to protect human life, they must also be held accountable when that trust is broken. No badge should place anyone above accountability. No family should have to fight for transparency while mourning a loved one. No mother should have to beg for the truth about what happened to her child. This fight is about Richard Johnson Jr., but it is also about every family that has been left searching for answers after losing someone they love. It is about equal justice under the law. It is about transparency. It's about making sure that every life is treated with dignity and every death is investigated with honesty. I'm not standing here asking for special treatment. I am asking for fairness. I am asking for accountability. I'm asking for the truth. My son's life had value. His life mattered before December 30, 2025, and it matters today. As a mother, I will not stop speaking his name. I will not stop demanding answers. I will not stop fighting until the truth comes to light. To everyone listening, I ask you to stand with our family, stand for transparency, stand for accountability, stand for justice. Because when a family is denied the truth, justice is denied to us all. Richard Johnson deserved to live. He deserved to come home, and he deserved justice. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Gloria. I'll just introduce myself quickly. My name is Attorney Andrea Farrell. I'm with the Jeff Scott Olson Law Firm. I represent the family. On behalf of the family, I would like to say thank you to the Independent Police Monitor for their thorough, fair, and open investigation. We finally have some transparency and some honesty about what happened that night between Madison Police and Richard Johnson that led to his death. And while this very transparent investigation has given us new answers, it's also raised new questions about why the truth didn't come out earlier in other investigations. Though this investigation has come to a conclusion, this is just a start for the family. We will keep looking into this case, and we will fight for honesty and transparency and justice on behalf of Richard Johnson, on behalf of his family, and on behalf of the entire community that the Madison Police Department is entrusted to serve and protect. Thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. Johnson, this office will continue to stand with you. Next, we're gonna have one of our PCOB board members, Katie.
Hello, everyone. I wrote something down because I didn't want to misspeak and I wanted to get everything in, but I might go a little bit off script because I've just been so moved by your words, Ms. Johnson, and I'm so sorry to hear, and my condolences to you. This should never happen. So as Mika mentioned, my name is Katie Nelson. I serve as a member of the Police Civilian Oversight Board. But first and foremost, I'm a member of this community. I want to begin by offering, of course, my deepest condolences to the Johnson family. No investigation can erase the pain of loss, but every family deserves a process that is thorough, transparent, and rooted in accountability. Thankfully, that's what happened here. I also want to recognize the Office of the Independent Police Monitor for conducting its review with integrity, diligence, and independence. Super, super important that we remain independent. The findings in this case demonstrate why independent civilian oversight is not optional, it's essential. When serious misconduct occurs, our community must be able to trust that there is an independent body with the authority, resources, and courage to examine the facts objectively and hold systems accountable. Oversight exists not to undermine policing, but to strengthen it and ensure transparency, fairness, and public confidence. I'm really asking our community, and I say this and I speak to my community, to support and trust our office as we work through these things. Public safety is built on trust. Trust is built through accountability, and accountability requires independent oversight that is adequately funded, protected from political influence, and empowered to do work without interference. Causes like this remind us that civilian oversight is not simply about reviewing individual incidents. It's about ensuring that the systems entrusted with extraordinary authority remain accountable to the people they serve, and about honoring the principle that no institution is above scrutiny and that every member of our community deserves dignity, fairness, and justice. If we are serious about creating safer communities, then we must equally be serious about investing in independent oversight. That means providing offices like the Office of Independent Police Monitor with the resources, staffing, and institutional independence necessary to conduct thorough investigations. And it's heavy on the institutional independence. Because of that institutional independence, we were able to do things like get our own medical examiner to actually disclose things that we wouldn't have known otherwise, and I think that that's extremely important. Community accountability and public safety are not competing values, but our inseparable, strong, independent civilian oversight helps build a police department that is more transparent, more responsive, and ultimately more worthy of the public's trust. Our responsibility is not only to respond when something goes wrong, but to build systems that earn and sustain the confidence of the community every single day. I also say that to say I'm born and raised in Madison, Wisconsin. I've been working in the community for the last 8 years, and it's time for us to activate. It's time for us to work together, not work against one another, and do something different. So the time is now. Let's go, 608.
Thank you, Katie. And next, we are going to have Alder Carmela Glenn.
Thank you, everyone. I just want to say this up front. Today is about Richard Lee Johnson. I have so much to say, and I'll be saying it with Madison 365, but today I want this to be about the family. And I want to thank you, and I want to thank Gloria Johnson for being here and for the courage it takes to stand in front of cameras and tell the world what happened to your son. My name is Carmela Glenn, and I represent District 18 on Madison Common Council. I am here today because Richard Lee Johnson was a resident of this city, because his mother came to us for answers, and because the findings in the monitor just presented demand a public response from elected leadership. I want to be direct about what we just heard. An officer shoved Richard Johnson's head into the ground with enough force to press his chin into the dirt. That act was captured on the officer's own dash cam. It does not appear in any official report. The officer denied it under oath. Richard Johnson said, "I can't breathe." It is also on the audio recording. It does not appear in any official report. For 29 minutes, he groaned and heaved and fought to breathe in the back of a squad car. When he went silent, the officers believed he had calmed down. He was in cardiac arrest. 10 minutes passed before anyone started compressions. The Dane County Medical Examiner ruled his death accidental, complications of cocaine toxicity. The district attorney declined to prosecute. The internal affairs cleared all three officers. They returned to full duty. The Office of Independent Police Monitors, independent forensic pathologist Dr. Victor Whedon, with over 35 years of experience, reviewed the same evidence and reached a different conclusion. The toxicology drawn at the moment Richard's cardiac arrest showed only inactive cocaine metabolites. Inactive metabolites cannot cause overdose. Dr. Whedon's opinion is that Richard Lee Johnson died from prone restraint cardiac arrest caused by police action. In forensic classification, that is homicide. Every decision to clear these officers was built on a medical finding that an independent expert says is wrong. That means every one of those decisions must be revisited. This didn't happen in a vacuum. Richard Johnson was black. He was unhoused. He had asthma and a history of addiction. He encountered a system that our own data shows does not treat everyone the same. He never appeared before a judge. He never got help. He died in police custody. And until his mother walked into the Office of Independent Police Monitor, no institution had told the full truth about how. I want to say something about what we just witnessed, because it matters for every conversation this city is about to have about the future of this office. Think about the institutional sequence in this case. A state criminal investigation agency conducted a 188-page investigation. The Dane County Medical Examiner performed an autopsy and certified a cause of death. The district attorney reviewed the file. MPD's own internal affairs division conducted its own review. One after another, every institution with authority over this case reached the same conclusion. The officers were cleared, the death was accidental, the case was closed. That is not accountability. That is institution protecting the systems they are a part of. The district attorney was present during officer interviews. He accepted the medical examiner's findings without question. Internal affairs cleared the officers based substantially on the same finding. The state investigation produced no recommendations. Each institution deferred to others. Each conclusion became the next institution's justification. Systems cover the ass of systems. That is what happened here. And it would have stayed that way if Gloria Johnson had not filed a complaint, and if this city had not built an office with the independence to look at the same evidence and refuse to accept the institutional consensus. The Office of Independent Monitor retained its own forensic pathologist because it had the independence to ask a question no other institution asked. What if the cause of death is wrong? That question produced a different answer, one that contradicts every prior institutional determination and that this city now has to reckon with. This is exactly why independent oversight exists. Not for the cases where the system works, for the cases where every institution with authority has already decided it did and moved on. I am calling for the Dane County Medical Examiner to review the cause and manner of death in light of Dr. Whedon's independent findings. I am calling on the Dane County District Attorney's Office to review the decision not to prosecute in light of what this investigation produced. I am calling on MPD leadership to implement the policy and training changes that the Officer of Independent Police Monitor has recommended on prone restraint, on medical monitoring during transport, and on what officers are required to tell EMS. I want to speak directly to the new MPD leadership. Chief Patterson has shown willingness to engage with this office. That I have taken seriously, and I still do. But I want to be honest by what that means now. These findings are on the record. The police has them, The family has them. This community is watching what happens next. Good intention and open doors are not enough anymore. What accountability looks like from MPD leadership in the coming weeks and months, whether these policy changes are implemented, whether these recommendations are acted on, whether this department can look at what happened to Richard Lee Johnson and say, we will not let this happen again. That is the test. Not words, action. And this council will be watching. And I'm calling on the full Common Council to respond to these findings, not as an administrative matter, but as a moral and civic emergency that they are. Let me be clear about what happens if these institutions do not respond. This council has tools: budget authority, ordinance power, the ability to compel, to restrict, and to act. We have used them before, and we will use them again. These are not requests made in hope that the right people are listening. They are the first step. Gloria Johnson trusted that there was somewhere to go. The Office of Independent Police Monitor was there. Our job now is to make sure that that trust was not misplaced, that the findings this office produced lead to real accountability, real policy change, and real protection for the next person who ends up in the back of a squad car in this city. Richard Lee Johnson deserved better. Richard Lee Johnson deserved better. His family deserves the truth, and this community deserves to know when something like this happens. Every institutional responsible for justice will do its job. We are committed to making sure they do. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to open it up for questions at this time. I spoke with Chief Patterson on Tuesday, made him aware of some of my findings. He did not receive the full investigative report until this morning. I have never spoken to the DA. So there's a couple of things. When Ms. Johnson initially did her interview with this office, and she was asked, essentially, what does justice look like for her? The most sincere thing she said was that a public apology and justice for her son. And I want to say to you, you deserve so much more than just a public apology. And we are going to fight for so much more than just a public apology. Your son deserves to be here. So that's the first step, is whatever justice looks like for this family is what we are committed to pursuing. Secondly, I have asked, Dr. Whedon did a presentation for the district attorney's office that the chief was not present for. So they are aware of his expertise and his work. I have asked that not only that they meet with him, but do a training. This is a situation where we need reform now, like not yesterday. People's lives are at stake. As of this morning, I have received 3 calls of folks saying they had a medical emergency and could have lost their life and plan on filing a complaint. And so we need to put, I give a list of recommendations on what needs to take place. Please look at the report. But it is putting those things into place now and not later. I think that if this was their brother, their nephew, their uncle, Mr. Johnson would be alive.
Can you talk a little bit about the cooperation or non-cooperation that you received from agencies? Was it difficult to get records from MPD or the Department of Justice?
well, let me just name, because I'm always going to center the family. I have called for DCI to release the unredacted report to the family immediately. They should have already had it, and they just recently received it in the last couple of weeks. That's unacceptable. Unacceptable. So I'll just name that. In regards to us, we got all of the information that we needed. I'll always say that up front. Timing, how we are being treated as still somewhat of a public requester. And so that makes my job a lot harder. That makes Greg's job a lot harder because we have to sift through a lot of information when it is received like a public records request. We never received the video from surrounding areas pertaining to the parking lot. We did not receive autopsy. Anytime there is an autopsy report, there are pictures. And so for the last almost 6 months, Greg has had to hear me talk about where are these pictures, why don't we have them. I then started to assume maybe the medical examiner did not have them, no one had them. But as I dove into the investigation, I seen that DCI definitely received them from the medical examiner.
How do you distinguish between excessive force and enough force to affect the arrest, an arrest?
So when we're looking at excessive force, Mr. Johnson was already on the ground. His hands were already behind his back. There was no need for an officer to put his knee on his neck, on his shoulder. There was no need to shove his head in the ground. There was no need. He was not being aggressive at any point in any of the videos. He was not being aggressive. When the pursuit took place with the new officer, he was the only, and I'll just say this, the new officer was the only officer that was in the most vulnerable position because we do not have body-worn cameras, and so we did not see what happened. We just had to take his word for it, right? He was honest throughout the entire investigation process and talked about how Mr. Johnson was not aggressive. That officer talked about how Mr. Johnson was essentially in distress and how he was struggling and fighting for his life. The officer talked about how he sat Mr. Johnson up on his leg, and I see that in the video, and let him rest up on him. And so I say all that to say, when we're talking about excessive force, Mr. Johnson was not a threat at the point where excessive force was utilized, and it just was unnecessary. So that's the difference. The initial pursuit and the Mr. Johnson tripping and the officer tripping on top of him and tackling him, I didn't review that video footage. All I seen was the reports. And based on that, once he took Mr. Johnson down, there was no more force used. And that officer was the only officer that has been honest throughout this whole investigation. Sure. So, and Greg, you can jump in here, but Ms. Johnson came before I got here. So a part of my investigation was having to review everything that she submitted prior to me getting here because essentially she waited a year, you know, because no investigations were actually being fully investigated at the time. Any other questions? Yes, I'm definitely on the record saying people want to have the conversation about BWC being about prevention. It is about accountability. When there is no record of what happens, especially when people view somebody's life less than, There are many times where two of the three officers dehumanized Mr. Johnson. And so it is very important, because if we have no evidence, that is why a lot of things go unseen, unheard, or go under the radar, and no one asks the questions because the evidence is not there. Yeah, it's very, Greg, do you know a number?
I can't give an accurate number, but I can't give an accurate number, but I would say easily half or more.
And I would just say, like, where I'm from, we did a lot to get rid of and reduce not only the carotid restraint, but also prone. And, there are a few medical examiners that are experts in custody and police-involved deaths. And so these are things that need to be trainings on national levels and go well deeper. And I think Dr. Whedon speaks to that in his report as to why, yes, folks should be held accountable, but how we do that, we need to be intentional, because folks are still learning or taking the time to dive deeper. Yes, so when Dr. Whedon was retained, there was no clue until after reaching out to him of him thinking that we were reaching out because I think he had applied at that time. I don't know the details of his situation. But ultimately, he did not get the position. I don't know the exact date because I'm not in his business like that. But he did not take on that position until months and months after he had already produced our report. Yeah. Yes, so I think the same recommendations that go for MPD in regards to making sure that you're asking certain questions, was there a prone restraint used? Was there any type of restraint used? How long were they in this position? Did you actually do recovery? I think one thing that folks are skipping over is the fact that recovery, in all of the reports, they talk about how they moved him into a recovery position. The recovery position never took place. It went one smooth position and him going up on his feet. And so there's multiple, but in regards to the medical examiner, I think that one of the first steps is, I'm glad to hear that they did ultimately hire Dr. Whedon. And I believe that based on the presentations that he's already provided to the district attorney's office, and this is an assumption, is that because of his expertise in this particular area, they are planning on putting things into place and position to make change. Would you like to add? I can see you out of the corner of my eye.
Okay, I don't know if this is politique, but in these kinds of situations, institutions have a choice. They can either go into CYA mode, or they can go into a mode of being open to new information and accountability.
Anything else?
How quickly do you hope MPD will actually adopt these policy changes? Do you anticipate that they actually will?
What I will say is, I believe that sometimes the intention is there, but as you see, there are a lot of entities and systems at play. And so I don't know I don't know what will happen. I don't have faith in the system right now. But this is a new day, and this is an opportunity for them to do something different and not let politics come into play. Thank you all.